We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
In 5, 4, 3.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. I am one of your hosts, Ruben.
And I'm Cassandra.
And we are joined today by a very special guest who's going to be talking with us about her projects, about her views. Yeah, you might know her as Gabby Rivera, an iconic comic book writer, an iconic writer, period. One of her biggest books is Juliet Takes a Breath, and she is currently writing America, which is the first queer Latina superhero on a mainstream comic book written by a queer Latina. So without further ado, here is Gabby Rivera. Hi, Gabby.
Hello. How are you?
We're good.
Hey, Gabby.
Hi. Happy
weekend.
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here. This is super fun.
We're happy that you're here.
Right? Yes, we are so excited that you're here.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, this is my first time out in Oakland, and, this Bay Area love is so refreshing and so beautiful.
Yeah, because New Yorkers are assholes.
New York's got a tough love kind of thing, you know? It's a tough love. It's a good love, but it's a tough love.
Yeah, and just to be transparent, Cassandra, where are you located? Where are you calling in from?
Calling in. I'm a listener, and I'm calling in from El Paso, Texas.
Yeah.
Hi.
So...
Dirty South, here. Let me stop. Okay.
Is El Paso Dirty South officially?
No, I just wanted to say that. I just wanted a reason to say that. I'll stop.
Yeah.
So we're at La Frontera.
So what we have going on today is like a multi. What do you call it? Multi-coast.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're like.
Yeah.
This is wild, right? Like this is like. Interstate across the U.S. Latinx people in communication, right? El Paso, Oakland by way of L.A., and Brooklyn by way of the Boogie Down Bronx.
So New Yorkers are very specific about Brooklyn and Bronx.
Yes,
and
those are our boroughs.
But it's New York.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, listen, the way that when I was like, oh, Ruben's from Oakland, and as you were going to the bathroom, you were like, I'm from L.A.
I was about to say that. You did the exact same thing.
Because they're like, if you're Brooklyn, then you're Brooklyn. And if you're Bronx, then you're from the Bronx. And Bronx and Brooklyn love each other. We're like primos, you know what I mean? We are cousins. And then there's Queens, and Queens is like its own vibe, you know what I mean? Queens is a little more laid back, better food, more Asian folks too, you know what I mean? A lot of Latino, Latin American Latinos out there. And so Queens, we love Queens, hard to get to Queens. And there's Staten Island. We do not mess with Staten Island, sorry.
Are they rich?
They're Republicans.
Oh.
When Obama was elected, folks out in Staten Island were beating up people, black people and youth of color.
Shut up.
So they're like those cousins that you only see at the family reunions that you don't really like, and they think that they're better than you anyway. And then there's Manhattan. So Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island.
Okay, so a couple things that that brings up for me. First of all, it's different because LA and Oakland are 6 hours away from each other. And things are like a 20-minute train ride.
You think? No, it's literally 2 hours to get from the Bronx to Manhattan, to Brooklyn by train. Because of gentrification and white people and all the people that created infrastructure in New York to get from the Bronx to Brooklyn, you have to go from the Bronx through Manhattan to Brooklyn. None of the outer boroughs can connect with each other. And that makes it really hard, especially for people of color to try to get to work and hang out and build community without it being centralized in Manhattan in some way.
I've never been to New York, but this is all very, very interesting. I'm jotting it down.
Lies. You know?
She's lying, y'all. Y'all can't see.
You know what?
I'm taking it all in. It's very interesting.
So, yeah.
because obviously that's not my reality here. But.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was a kid, I had like these grand visions of New York, right? Because of Sex and the City, right? And then Ugly Betty.
Aw, Ugly Betty. Wait, can we have a moment of like just love and joy for Ugly Betty?
Yes. Shout out America Ferrera.
Right? Like, coming into the space. Listen, you know, a lot of times folks ask me, like, Gabby, what is it like to be, like, a queer brown author? What is it like in the landscape of literature amongst all these white people? This is white people asking me this shit, right? And so a lot of times I'm like, you know, we need more representation. Like, we're often, as Latinas, portrayed as gang folks and getting pregnant early. And while those elements are part of our community and folks who experience that life should be honored and revered, it's not the only narrative, right? And so I'm always pushing for more narratives. But when I started watching Ugly Betty again, I was like, Ugly Betty? Betty is a writer. She is ambitious. She's nerdy. She is like the first iteration of like Jane the Virgin, right? Like, mm-hmm. And then Jane the Virgin is also a Latina who's writing and telling stories. And so I'm like, oh shit, there is some sort of sneaky, beautiful media legacy that we have of like Latinas being creators. I never really put that together until like just recently.
This is
well, thank you for putting it together. And yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, this that's is true. The first time I realized this.
Yes.
All right, what y'all Mind can't blown. See is they're both looking okay. into the sky with soft, dreamy eyes like, we are creators.
Here we are recording this podcast. Yeah.
We are magic. Latinx is magic.
We are.
Or whatever.
Wow.
No, but that's real. And, like, there's also something to be said about, like, the queerness of Ugly Betty.
Yeah.
She was, like, this little, you know, chubby girl working at the fashion industry and was, like, I think even, like, as horrible as, like, the trans representation was, right? It still existed, right? Mm. There. And that was something that I often hear. It's like, yeah, Rebecca Romijn's character was kind of horrible, but it was the only thing we had for a minute, right?
Yeah.
And then we had, like, Justin.
Oh, my goodness.
Who was, like, the first time I saw this, like, little, like, sissy brown boy just, like, existing. I mean, there was, like, Marcos and Degrassi, but homegirl, I don't know about her.
And before all of that, right, was For My So-Called Life.
I knew you were going to say that.
Ricky! Justin! Oh, but Justin was just so, like, modern, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, his awareness of pop culture and his, like, understanding that, like, he was as fabulous, but also very, like, vulnerable. I love that character, Justin. Yeah.
Wait, are you old enough to know My So-Called Life? Like, were you...
I think I'm older than you, first of all.
I mean, you are, but I feel like you're more, like...
I don't watch TV.
Yeah, I was about to say really, that. She's, yeah, electric. She's, like, actually, like, a really cool person.
When people say that, I'm like, yeah, but I bet you when you're in the bathroom, you'd be sneak watching TV.
No. When I say that, people are like, anyway. I don't own a TV. Like, the shows that I watch are, like, on Netflix, and it's always, like, the same shows over and over, and that is, like, The Office. But I have watched Jane the Virgin. I've never seen Ugly Betty, to be honest.
Homework.
Yeah.
Immediate.
Yeah. But I know what Ugly Betty is, and I know that, you know what I mean, but I've never watched it, so, but I'll do it. I'll do that.
Don't you also watch Law & Order SVU? Isn't that, like, a big thing?
I was about to say that when you were like when you just talked about Sex and the City in reference to New York, of like mine is like SVU. And that's because like,
if you mash them both together.
My grandma loves SVU, so I've just watched it with her, and now I'm just a big SVU fan, even though it's like, I think my friend was like, really, you love SVU? That's like a cop fucking show. I'm like, I know, but you know.
You're not allowed to curse?
No, we know. It's just, no, we can,
why? Oh, okay, I was like, oh, no, what happened? You want.
No, yeah, but I love SVU. So, you know, someone had emailed me, I think I said that on one of my podcasts, someone had emailed me, and they're like, do you ever do, like, workshops in New York? But, I don't know, it was probably a joke, But but I was like, wow, if I ever go to New York, I want, like, I'm going to feel like I'm on SVU. But I feel like I shouldn't feel like that.
Yo, one of my first jobs in TV film, because that's what I did for like 10 years before lots of stuff, was on the original Law & Order. I was an office assistant to the executives for the like original like dun dun.
Yes.
With, yeah.
I kind of watch that.
I love it.
It's the same thing every episode.
It is. But there's the original Law & Order, and then there's like Criminal Intent. But yeah. I only fuck with SVU. Like, I don't want to see any other fucking Law & Order, just SVU. That's it.
Okay.
I'm glad we covered this.
Yeah, this is important. Very... and you're right. I guess if we mesh both of our images of New York, you said we got a perfect image of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, woof, what were we talking about? There was so much that we just kind of threw out there.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about, like, this conversation that we're having, like, El Paso,
oh,
New York,
yeah.
LA.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, so we're
having... Yeah, and it's also how you were like, I'm not from Oakland, I'm from LA, and, like, I said that to you, too, before we started the podcast, like, I'm not, like, because you said Texas is all the same, but it's not, because I'm not from fucking Austin or Houston, okay, first of all, and that's, okay, don't...
Much love to everybody out in Houston, though.
Oh,
much
yeah.
Much love to everyone in Houston.
Beyonce, shout out Beyonce.
And Selena, right? They're,
oh.
Not George Bush, but...
Wait, I just want to give a little shout out to my homie Charlie out in Texas right now. Little Latinx, Chicanx, punk babe. I see you, Charlie.
Shout out.
Hello, Charlie. Shout out, Charlie. Mm. Yeah, but it's also like that too because Texas is very big and El Paso is very, it's just like on its own. Like I feel like Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Austin, like you, it's like a shorter drive to get to those places, but like El Paso to Austin is 8 hours. El Paso to Dallas is 10 hours.
Whoa.
So yeah. So El Paso's kind of like on its own in like West Texas. And so it is very different. All parts of Texas are very different. And so, yeah. So no, I am from El Paso. That's the point that I, that I'm from El Paso, period.
Like,
that's a country distance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said 8 hours, yeah. And I was like, what? I would be out of New York in 8 hours. I would be in Canada if I took a drive. Well, I'd be close. I'd be pretty damn close to Canada. 8 hours?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Yeah. So it sucks because, like, there's not that many, like, bands that come through El Paso. And every time there's, like, a show that I want to see, I'm like, do I want to drive 10 hours to Dallas or drive 10 hours to L.A.? Like,
you're 10 hours from
same.
L.A.?
So, like, if I drive fast, which I do, I would get there in 10 hours. Google Maps says 12, but I get there in 10. But that's the same distance from if I were to drive to Dallas.
Wow.
So I can get through, like, New Mexico, Arizona, California.
Wait, but speaking of bands, though, and, like, El Paso, can we talk about Girl in a Coma? Because I love them so much. And I swear to God, if you say anything blasphemous, I'm leaving.
No. I love Girl in a Coma. I was going to say that they're from San Antonio.
Oh!
They're from San Antonio, but I love Girl in a Coma. They always come to El Paso, though. And that's probably because, like, they're from Texas, so they know. And Girl in a Coma's side band, Fea, is, if you haven't listened to Fea, they're amazing. They're amazing. And shout out to Fani if she's listening, because I love her. She's a drummer. And, yeah.
Yo, I love Girl in a Coma so much. I've seen them, like, a bunch of times. The only times they've come out to New York, I have been there in the front row. Like, I was so impacted by their presence. I saw them, like, for the first time ever on Logo. They had, like, one of their big songs, I think, like, maybe Clumsy Sky or something like that, had a video with Amanda Lepore. And I was just, like, blown away that there were, like, tattooed, hard rock, babe, like, gorgeous babes playing like punk rock, like, or just hard rock, garage rock music. And I saw them and I was like, oh my God, I have to be a part of this. And I'd just been listening. And like, they're so, to me, if this world wasn't on some bullshit white supremacist patriarchy shit, Girl in a Coma would be like our fucking Metallica. They are so, so talented and so passionate, and their energy is incredible. Like, have you seen her, like, on stage? She is like a banshee. Like, Nina is wild. Like, And I'm convinced that the reason that they're not like fucking Rolling Stones, Metallica, even fucking like Fall Out Boy, you know what I'm saying? Like something part of mainstream American pop is because of like this culture of white supremacist patriarchy. Like that's how solid of a Girl in a Coma fan I am. Yo, and like as like white a chunky like brown queer who's read as masculine with visible tattoos and short hair, they're also like the first visible like queer band that resonated with me. Like I don't look like Tegan and Sarah. I love Tegan and Sarah, but I look like the drummer and the bassist, you know what I mean? Like that's what I look like. And I was just like, wow, you can be sexy and cool and play music and be on TV and you know, and like that was like my one glimpse of what that could look like for me, you know?
Texas Love, Girl in a Coma.
Everyone
should go listen to them if you haven't.
Yeah, they're on Spotify and like I am just so in love with their Si Una Vez, like the Selena cover. That is like the best place to start. Also, when I'm writing America, I listen to a lot of Girl in a Coma. Like if there was an America movie, if there was an when there's an America movie, I would in a dream world I would want Girl in a Coma to like do the soundtrack, like to score that shit.
Yeah. So you mentioned like if there was an America Chavez movie, right? You would have this soundtrack, right? So first, who would play her if she were to be cast tomorrow? And then after that, what is America Chavez? For people who might never have heard of it, right? Because I am a huge comic book geek, right? Like, I have a X-Men tattoo on me. Like,
I want to see.
Yeah, I have Jean Grey tattooed on me.
What?
Yeah. But Cassandra is, like, when I said she was a cool girl, like, she's, like, she's a cool bitch. Like, she's, like, she doesn't even, like, she's, like, I'm a nerd to her. Like, so she don't fuck around with this nerd shit, right?
Bitter brown femmes. We don't fuck around with that nerd shit.
I'm not cool. What he's saying is that I'm not cool. I'm boring. Okay. Ruben just wants to drag the shit out of me.
TBH.
That's all.
So after you...
Sunday morning. That's what he wants to do. He just wants to drag me.
So first, who would play America Chavez? And then after that, what is America Chavez?
All right. Well, I'm of two minds with who would play America Chavez, right? So one, I just have this like daydreamy like vision that it would be in like an international search. And they would just like somewhere out in the world is like a young woman who's got it all and it, like embodies America Chavez. And we don't know who she is because we don't do enough investigating in like Latina actresses and communities and art and stuff. So open it up, do it like they did for Selena, even though they eventually went with Jennifer Lopez, which is like classic, but also really interesting. We're not gonna go there, but like just open it up. I want to see, y'all don't see what I see when these young folks, non-binary, trans folks, women, these young girls, teenagers, when they come to like signings and they come to readings and they're dressed as America Chavez or they've got their like first starter pair of America Chavez self-designed kicks or a t-shirt with a heart, they're like glowing. Like something is different. And so if we made a movie, I think to have that energy in it, it would have to be somebody fresh. But if we had to cast it tomorrow, well, oh my God, if we were to cast it tomorrow, probably Gina Rodriguez, right? Because that would be the big blockbuster magic moment for everybody. But Gina, I also want to give a little shout out to homegirl from The Get Down, because I think that like somebody who is like Afro-Latina, like visibly Afro-Latina, that would be like such a beautiful moment too, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's major. So also now on to.
Oh, yeah.
Who is America Chavez?
America Chavez. America Chavez is a character that has been in the Marvel Universe for about 6 years. Created by McKelvey and some other folks. Thomas McKelvey, I think. Oh my God, I'm bad with names. But she is this character who's been around and people love her. She is tough. She's known for her one-liners. She is one of the strongest characters in the entire Marvel universe. She can also punch so hard that she breaks through other dimensions and creates a star portal with the punch. So there's that. And she's also, did I say this, the first queer Latina, lesbian Latina character? And she's never had a solo series before. She's always been a team player, like Team Brigade, Young Avengers, The Ultimates. She's now in another comic, the leader of The Ultimates, or she has been. And in this series, she's on her own, and it's pretty rad. she's also, in a lot of ways, like an orphan, right? Her mom sacrificed themselves for the good of the utopian parallel and to keep the universe intact. So at 6 years of age, America fled her homeland and is never able to return because the seal was closed on her. And so she's been dimension hopping and an orphan and a brown girl all by herself in the world since she was six.
Yeah. So not only is America Chavez queer, right, but she has two moms, right? So her two moms were the ones who sacrificed their lives to save the entire world and consequently made America Chavez an orphan. And so there's a lot of things that I want to unpack there, right? So
let's do it.
There might be some spoilers just ahead, but not like too deep, but I'm going to try not to. But on this topic of like not being able to return to your homeland, right? What America Chavez's mom went through, right? Was kind of like they played into femicide, right? That happened, mm-hmm. right? And then something that you repeat, I don't know if consciously or unconsciously, in the book, right? In America Chavez, when the maltricks the young girls who...
Oh, from, the Chavez Guerrillas?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Maltesha.
Maltesha. Okay, yeah. I can't pronounce shit,
it's
right?
Okay. That's after my mom, too. My mom, is Malta Rivera.
Yeah.
And when I was first coming up with names, I was like, I want to give a shout out to my mom. So, Maltesha.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are kind of like not pronounceable for me, like Lululemon Theta Phi Betas.
Oh, the Lilu Multipass Phi Theta Betas.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The Fifth Element?
No.
Yes. Lilu Multipass is the character that Mira, what's that white girl's name?
Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, Mila Jovovich. She plays Lilu Multipass.
I feel like if you saw a picture of her, the character, you would know.
Because everyone goes in like her purple wig, yeah. Right?
Orange, yeah.
Yeah. I've seen clips of it. I think the biggest thing, I've seen like the opera singer. And then, And then.
It's such a good movie, though. I love
Chris
that movie.
Chris Tucker.
And Bruce Willis.
Yeah. So I've seen Chris Tucker scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the blue opera singer scenes. And I've seen... Doesn't it start with, like, the main character is, like, a taxi driver?
Yeah, Bruce Willis.
And he runs into the Lululemon Pass girl?
Oh, my God. When I still, like, had the hots for men, Bruce Willis in that movie was my daddy.
Really? I've heard so many folks about Bruce Willis.
Ruben's like, I've never seen that movie, but I remember the beginning, the middle, and the end. He's, like, describing it. Is that the movie you're talking about? Yeah, I've never seen it.
You don't better know. Drag him! Don't drag know. Him!
I know pop culture. I am homosexual-ish.
So you're saying that I'm like re-perpetuating femicide.
Let's not re-perpetuating it, but like talking about ways in which it's kind of, for a lot of Latinxes who've had to fled their homelands, right? This is part of the narrative, right? And then you almost replicated that with the Maltrixia, with the gorilla, the Chavez Guerrillas, right? Where I remember the pink demon, I'm really horrible.
The
at
entity.
Names. The entity, yeah. I was like, it doesn't have a real name.
Yeah.
The entity was like attacking them and they were like, they're coming for our moms, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't say they're destroying our families. It says like specifically like, they're coming for our moms.
Yeah.
Right. So like, what is it? Does it resonate with you that, like, there's this underlying, like, very real topic of femicide, like, through America Chavez's, like, narrative?
Yes. I mean, you know, that narrative of her mom's sacrificing themselves, there's also no, like, real reason. Like, they got to save the universe, but that's the reason. I don't know the nuance of that reason. I don't know the, like, threads of it or, like, what was really happening. I'm still learning. I'm sure maybe the answer's out there, but I'm like, but why, you know? And so I'm working from that starting point and trying to figure out ways to, like, allow America the space to grieve.
Yeah.
There, to me, when I was reading and doing my research on her, I'm like, where is her, like, this one-liner tough girl thing? I get it. It's necessary. A lot of us are like that, I think. But there is a rage in there. And from that rage, underneath that is grief and despair. So, like, what is that? And how can we explore it and, like, open it up and really, like, flesh out America from that perspective? Like, shit, I can't imagine losing my mom, one mom, at six. You know what I mean? So yeah. And with the Chavez guerrillas and the moms, that line is so fun, is not funny, but it's so interesting because I originally was trying to run a storyline about the entity stealing moms and also trying to, like, steal culture. But there was a lot going on in those first few episodes, and we decided to, like, keep it as simple and as focused on America as possible while I got my, like, comic legs, you know? Yeah. Like, because this is still, like, a huge learning process for me, you know? But further along in the episodes, we're going to get into more of, like, issues on, like, gentrification and, like, the brutal effects of, like, white supremacy and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot there, right? So I want to, like, ask you things that you would, like, not commonly ask, right? Because I feel like we talked about how, like, when you're with, like, white reporters, they just ask you, like, very, like...
So, Gabby, do you feel like... Can you tell us about being Latina and queer as a writer?
Yeah.
The fuck?
And I remember...
Like, I'm sitting next to fucking Mike Smith, and no one's like, hey, Mike, so as a white guy, what's it like writing for other white guys? How does it feel inside your white guy brain and body to write about white things? Yeah. Like, ask him. Ask him that. If you're going to ask me, ask him.
Yeah. So we're going to... we're gonna pretend that we don't give a shit about what it's like to be the queer Latina, first queer Latina, writing a first queer Latina character, right? But on a mainstream comic book. So, we talked about white supremacy. One of the things that rings a bell with me right now is the fact that, like, so Charlottesville happened, you know, a couple weeks ago, right? Some of those guys were wearing Punisher shirts. Right.
Mm-hmm. And Hydra, right?
And Hydra shirts.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that when, and the thing with Hydra, if you're not familiar with Hydra, it's a thinly veiled comic book metaphor in the Marvel Universe for Nazis, right? So when, in, like, Nazi Germany, right? When they were toppled over, right? Like, Hydra became, like, a covert chapter of the Nazis, right? And so in the Marvel Universe right now, Hydras are actually in power of the world, right? They Captain America's one of them. It has been discovered.
God.
That he's like he has always been like a sleeper agent.
And that's so sick, right? Yeah. Like, if you think of, the only thing I do know about Captain America is the origins.
Yeah.
And how, like, he was created to be, like, the American, like, anti-fascist.
Yeah. Antifa. He was the original Antifa. Yeah, like, comic, right? Books.
OG Antifa Captain America.
Real quick, how do you say Antifa, everybody?
Antifa.
Antifa.
Antifa. I think I'm correct.
If you are gay, you say Antifa. If you are not gay, you say Antifa.
Yeah.
TBH. That's the trick. Everybody test your friends.
Oh, yes. This is a new Gator. This is a new Gator. How do you say Antifa?
Oh, my God. Someone... Where did... Antifa, la, 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 la.
Bye. I gotta go. Goodbye.
Yeah. That should be our Christmas episode. That should be the name of our Christmas episode.
Yes, and it will be. It will be.
I'm dead. I'm dead.
But yeah, like the way so when this storyline was originally being promoted, a lot of us were like, how are you going to promote Nazis, right, when we have a fucking Nazi in office, right? Mm. Like someone who wants people of color and Jewish people and other ethnic and marginalized folks, like, oppressed. Like, how are you going to push this major storyline that, you know, glorifies Nazis? And obviously, the alt-right has caught on to that, right, and latched onto that imagery. Where do you see America Chavez's place in this entire narrative and in this political moment, right? As
well, one thing that's interesting to me is that, like, right when Charlottesville happened, all of a sudden the image of America punching Hitler was being reshared all over, like, the internet. Like, I saw it all over the place, people being like, this is how I feel, or current mood, or, like, forever goals, or whatever it was. And it's, like, that picture of America moving Captain America out of the way to knock Hitler in the face. And that's the first issue. And a lot of people criticized us for doing that. Oh, you know, you're trying to just, this is like shock over substance, you know what I mean? Like, but I realize now how important it was to do that, right? To really center America, this beautiful, not beautiful looks, but like beautiful in power and in personality and just in every way. Being the central figure and like an epitome of like what it really is to be American and what it is to be brown and what it is to be a human. Like, you don't put up with bullshit. You don't put up with fascists, and by any means necessary, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that doesn't work for everybody, and whatever by any means necessary means to you, then that's how you show up in a space, right? But for America, if she's the strongest, like, character, she's going to use her might, you know? And, like, my initial feelings about this comic, even post-Cheeto election, was, like, I want it to be a healing space. So I want it to be fun. I want folks who read it, especially, like, little brown kids who read it, if they do, or teenagers, whoever's reading America, to, like, have a place but they can dive into a wild-ass story and just be in that story.
Yeah, and it is a wild-ass story. but, you know, one thing that I want to talk about before I forget is that, like, I never noticed that she pushes Captain America, you know, this, like, historic white hero to get the job done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that purpose?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was, like, you know, the punching the Nazi thing was both the idea of me and Will Moss, the editor. So, because my thing was like, I want to connect America to iconic American moments. Like Beyonce, the Beyonce cover. That was intentional. Like,
oh, okay.
You know, like I wanted, I'm like, okay, what is really, to me, what's American, right? To me, West Side Story is American. Beyonce is American. Punching Nazis is American.
Yeah.
Brown people are to me, like, American, right? Or in whatever ways, right? And so, so it was important for her to punch Captain America. And I think I lost my train of thought.
No, that's, you brought up something that I think you, I don't know if you read one of the criticisms, but the Beyonce cover.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Were you able to read some of the criticisms about it?
I didn't know there were criticisms about it.
Yeah, so one of the things about America Chavez is that if we say a lot of, like, Latina, right, and she's like a Latina superhero, but Latina means so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, me, even, like, between me and Cassandra, right, like, we're Chicanexes, right, which are part of, for a lot of people, that's part of the Latinx umbrella. But even the type of Chicanx, right? Like, she's a Tejana, right? And that's a different beast, right? than, like, my LA, like, Chicano ass, right? And same with, like, you're Puerto Rican, right? Like,
yeah.
So has America been, like, put, like, has her ethnicity been defined yet? Like,
oh, okay. Wait, but wait, you were talking about the criticisms of
the Beyonce cover. Yeah, because There's nothing.
We're leading up to the.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So from what I understand, so I didn't know, right, because I don't read a lot of comics, but artists get to kind of interpret characters as they will, right? There's a specific look for America, but when other artists draw her, and I've seen this with other characters too, like when she's a little kid in other editions that I'm not a part of, right? Sometimes she looks more like Afro-Latina. And then in this one with Joe Quiñones, she looks more like, I don't know, non-Afro-Latina. But then when someone else draws her, sometimes I'm like, she looks a little white. And so it kind of like is this whirlwind of like, who's drawing her now kind of thing, which I like. But to answer your next question, before I came on board and even right now, America has been some sort of like what I like to call generic Latinx.
See, like that's kind of an issue, right? Because, well, when I first saw her, I thought she was Puerto Rican or Dominican, right? Because, you know, there's that, she wears a lot of red, white, and blue. and you know you Puerto Rican.
Oh my God, like, flashback to me, freshman year of college, never taking off my Puerto Rican, like, bandera, and, like, putting a, like, snapback over it, thinking I was somebody, okay.
Yeah, so I thought she was, you know, I thought she was like that. But then I'm finding out she's not, right? So she's just, like, a, you know, just, like, a pan-Latinx person, right? So I think that, you know, that begs exploring, right? Because Even like the Latinx label can be really fucked up, right? Because it puts a lot of us under like this one thing that, and that erases a lot of people, right? And so the criticism I read.
Wait, but does it? When you say like it erases a lot of people, I would like to unpack that as
yeah,
well. Yeah. Because so, it's like a layered thing and I'm curious.
Yeah. So me and Cassandra are in the Southwest. Right? So for that, we are the, like, we're of Mexican descent, so we're the majority, right? And not only are we the majority as far as nationality goes, right? Because Latinx covers a lot of nationalities, but, like, racially, like, we're both, like, brown skin, like, mestizos, mestizexes of a native descent, right? So that's kind of the image of Latinx in the Southwest, right?
Yeah.
So we fit
for sure
perfectly into that. Nobody's ever going to question Latinidad. We're still not, like, the main people in, like, media saying that's still a lot of white Latinxes, right? But, you know, that also erases, you know, in the Southwest specifically, that erases specifically Central American Latinxes, who are another big population here, right? And racially, it erases, like, Afro-Latinxes, right? And a lot of indigenous Latinxes. And also, it kind of brushes over the fact that there's, you know, white Latinxes. So that's what we mean about, like, how it's, like, it puts all these people into the same category when we all have different experiences, right? And
yeah.
We all come from very different backgrounds.
I hear you. And this is the part where I kind of get, like, quiet and a little confused. And, like, I want to listen, but I also want to talk. And I feel like this is a good, like, learning space too, right?
Yeah.
Because it is really complicated to try to address folks that you love, that I have a connection with, and that I just baseline view as my people. Like,
yeah.
Black people and, like, brown people are my, like, no matter what, to me, you're my people.
Yeah.
And I look at it from, like, a love perspective too, because I just am always going to have love for you. If you're on the train and you need a dollar, I'm going to give you that dollar. Like, if you need a meal, whatever, I got you. And I also look at it from, like, a perspective of violence and solidarity, because when they come for you, they're going to come for me. And when they come for me, they're going to come in for fucking you too. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, so I, when I say Latinx, and maybe this is what I need to adapt and change. When I say Latinx, I mean, like, the entire fucking spectrum of what that could possibly imagine. Because to me, it's such a general term. I can't see how, like, like, to me, it's so general and absurd that it automatically covers everybody.
Yeah. And
but that's not. But when you want to talk to folks and everybody has their very specific, like, intersections of identity, that's where it becomes tricky, right? Because I want to make sure that I am talking to everyone and everyone feels like represented, included, and loved on. But I'm wondering like what I need to change in my vocabulary to make sure that comes across.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, I think my issue with like, or I think one of the nuances that we fail to unpack a lot of the times is that we do use Latinx as like an umbrella or Chicanx as an umbrella that I think in some ways pretends that we're all on equal footing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for example, like Black immigrants get deported at higher rates than non-Black immigrants, right? And white Latinxes are able to assimilate into, you know, mainstream culture in ways that other Latinxes are not, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, you know, Cameron Diaz and Louis C.K., they're Latinos.
What, Louis C.K. is Latin?
He's actually...
Yeah, he's Mexican.
Like, for real? Yes. Wait. Redheaded? No, he's not redheaded. Redheaded Louis C.K.?
See what I mean?
I mean, shout out to all the Puerto Rican redheads out there. I see you in the box. But, ooh!
Yeah, girl, Louis C.K. was raised in Mexico for most of his life. Like his childhood.
Wait, can we Google him? I must be picturing the wrong person.
It's the redheaded dude.
The softy white guy feminist who's always
on. I mean, we can talk about how he's problematic, but yeah, this guy. See what I mean?
Oh,
so like
shit, yeah.
His experience is not my experience.
No. Oh my god.
Cameron Diaz is Latina.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my god, there was a rumor in New York growing up that Vanna White was actually Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And we would call her Vanna Blanca like all the time.
Isn't she Puerto Rican?
See? It spread.
Well, we're talking about Mariah Carey, right? Because
we're
like, wait, is she, a lot of people don't know that she's, that her dad's from Venezuela.
Yeah.
Right? I just wanted to add Mariah Carey's name.
So yeah. No, I know, but the thing is that you bring up a good point is that like, see like how Vanna White, this unconfirmed white woman, is, like, afforded, like, Latinidad in ways that are not available to someone who is Black, like Mariah Carey, or, like, other Afro-Latinxes, indigenous Latinxes, right? Like, Latinidad is easily afforded to a lot of people who look a certain way. So that's
very true. You'll see, I feel like, and with that, is, like, you'll see it online all the time. Like, there'll be, like, white Latinx, and people are like, I'm still Latinx, I'm still Latina, they're still this. But then if we talk about the representation of, like, Zoe Saldana or Rosario Dawson, like, they're, like, what? They're just Black.
Whoa!
Not,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But when we're talking about white, about fucking white Latinx, everyone's like, no, like, how dare you? They're still Latina. But when we talk about, like, Black Latinx, they're like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
This is so hard for me to grasp.
And you see a lot of things, too, like, people using Latina or Latinx as, like, a race, right? When it's an ethnicity, right? So they're, like, put very, like, strict divisions between, like, Black and Latinx, right? As opposed to...
Yeah.
Same thing.
That's
like,
always been okay. So that's always been so weird for me. And like, this is good to talk with y'all about because, okay, one of the reasons we were talking about boroughs earlier, I'm from the Bronx, right? Like, my parents were born and raised in the South Bronx. My dad spent some time of his formative years in Puerto Rico. But my mom's like born and raised South Bronx, the corner of Ho Avenue, Fail Street. Shout outs to the South Bronx, Hunts Point area.
This is a very New York thing to do.
Yeah, so like, so, but I say that because my family grew up in a time where the Bronx was like ash. It was burning. The city of New York did not give a damn about any of the Puerto Ricans, Black, brown, white, or otherwise, or the Black people living in the Bronx. I'm talking about like my parents have childhood pictures of in front of burnt out buildings. The landlords figured it was more lucrative to burn the buildings down than to create new housing. And on top of that, they lived in a Bronx where New York City hadn't decided to really incorporate sanitation efforts. So it was burning and covered in trash, right? And so this experience of being Puerto Rican and in the Bronx and like in the middle of like also Black American communities was like this explosion of two cultures, right? And I don't know where that exists anywhere else. So when I feel like my parents and by default, the rest of us, like Puerto Ricans and Black people, were racialized in very similar ways and like brutalized, victimized, and also like whatever injustice of sanitation and injustice of housing and injustice of like not even having a neighborhood that wasn't on fire, whatever that's called, like Black and brown people were literally treated like in the same way. So like, I find it so wild that people don't, like, I assume all Black people were in some part like Latino. When I went to college in Baltimore was the first time that I was like, oh, not all Black people speak Spanish. You know what I'm saying? Because it was just like, we are all here, we're all doing this together. And even like my cousins in like hip hop culture, they were B-boys in the 80s, and it was like Afro-Latinos, Puerto Ricans, Black people, but everybody in Titi's house. You know what I'm saying? And so like, I think that that's a, like, yeah, my personal experience, right? Yeah. And so sometimes I think it might get me in trouble with folks, because when I say Latinx and when I say like, when the way that I talk even is very much rooted in like that Bronx, like,
yeah,
upbringing, right? Yeah. And so I have to remember, like, it's wild for me to hear that, like, yeah, your Chicanx experience is like vastly different from Cassandra's, because I just like, I imagine us all in this one lump, like just sitting in my family barbecue, we are literally like all the colors,
yeah,
but we're all Latinos.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's where I come from sometimes, and like, that's where I come from, period.
Yeah.
And I'm as I come out and talk to folks in other states, I'm realizing that that's a rare experience, and that in certain places I need to really unpack that, mm-hmm, so it doesn't look any other sort of way. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And I feel like that would be an ideal. Like, I feel like for a lot of people, like, that, yeah, we're all Latinx and that we're all different colors and races and nationalities, and that we you know, unite and come together. I feel like obviously that's like the ideal that we all want, but I think we can never get there until people acknowledge that we are different, and actually different in privileges and in the how we are oppressed and how we go through life, not just like, oh, well, we're all different colors, but I'm not going to check my shit, you know? And totally. So that's what I hope. Like, I'm accused of, like, hating white Latinx and, like, light-skinned Latinx all the time whenever I talk about colorism, whenever I talk about anti-Blackness in our community. And it's just, like, tiring. And I feel like if we got to the point of acknowledging that you don't go through life like I do, and I don't go through life the way Ruben does, et cetera, then we would all be able to build together. Because I feel like that's what's lacking in the Latinx community.
We were talking about the Beyonce cover.
Oh, yes. Yes, please, let's talk about that, because it was like a worrisome thing and also a joyful thing.
So when it came out, I was like, oh my God, this is, I thought exactly what you mentioned earlier, right? Like, you're inserting America, Chavez, into important American moments, right? The thing about the Beyonce cover is that, like, because America Chavez has always been, like, ambiguously Latinx, right? It's never been clear if she's Afro-Latina, right? Or if she's mestiza, mm-hmm, right? Or if she's white Latina, right? Because she's been, like, drawn in so many different ways.
Sure.
So the thing about the Beyonce cover is that, you know, it was an homage to Formation, which is, like, a Black power anthem.
Yep.
Specifically, like, a Black women's power anthem, right?
Yep.
So it was, like, if America Chavez is not an Afro-Latina, where is her place in this Black women's empowerment anthem?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I sat with that for a really long time. And I don't know what is right and what is wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think, if I may, like, it also is representative of my struggle as Puerto Rican, because I know that I come from Black people, indigenous people, and white Spaniards. I know that I'm not racialized as Black, but I know that all of that is in me. So, like, what do I claim? If I say Latinx, but I don't say Afro-Latinx, am I inherently, like, cutting off the, like, you know, African origins of who I am. You know what I'm saying? So one, this is all to say, like, not woe is me, but like, this is something I'm constantly thinking about, you know? And when it came to the cover, my initial thoughts were like what I shared with you, is that America's so new, but also so important. How can I connect her to American iconography? Like, in an email I had, like, let's have her in West Side Story. Let's have her as Marilyn Monroe. Let's have her as Beyonce. Let's have her in as, like, I think we looked at, like a Big Pun Remy Ma cover of XXL. You know what I mean? Like I had a list.
Okay, I guess, just, like, really quick, like, I am upset that her hip-hop cover was Hamilton and that it wasn't something.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Lin-Manuel, but something better, like, or more iconic.
Or more, Hamilton and, right?
Yeah.
So there is, like, obviously no one's going to see that, right? What matters is what comes out.
Yeah.
And so when Joe Quiñones, who's also Latinx, he is the artist who draws America, one of, but yeah. He's the main artist.
Yeah, he's the main artist.
Came back with that sketch, and I was just like, wow, that's beautiful. Oh my God, what do we do with this? And at that point, it's like then a little more out of my control, right? So there's the cover, and then there's the impact, and then it's like, is this wrong? Like, can we do this with America? And I think that, like, this is for number two, issue number two. My feelings were like, if she's Latina, and as a Latina coming up in this world, Black womanhood is something that I value, like, so much. And it's so, it is the, like, foundation of everything in this country. And my womanhood has always been, like, right alongside that as well. Because I have taken my values from that and been like, you know, and whiteness has just been, like, so strange and so foreign. So it's complicated. I don't have the right answer. I probably fucked it all up. Like, I don't have the right answer. I will say that because America's generic Latinx, that really resonated with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, to me, that is also Blackness. You know what I'm saying? And in all the ways that she's been drawn to me to represent, like, all of the possibilities.
Yeah.
But I do understand that folks, that it is in many ways possibly problematic because she's not expressly Afro-Latina.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I want to be held accountable, but I also feel like there's a little nuance maybe, but maybe there isn't. Maybe that's just me hoping there's nuance. I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess, is there a plan of making her, placing her in a specific ethnic group?
Like, oh my God.
Puerto Rican?
Oh my God, you guys.
Don't make her Mexican.
See? There you go. Someone's going to think I said that. And then, ¿qué fue eso? You know what I mean? Like,
This is coming from someone who's of Mexican descent. I say that because if you make her Mexican, the Chica next one, it'll just reinforce all their bullshit.
Well, yeah.
And that's coming from, like, I actually thought the same as Ruben. I thought that she was Puerto Rican or Dominican.
It's because I sound Puerto Rican.
Yeah, I thought it was already established, like, her ethnicity. But now that you're saying, you know, having this conversation, that you're saying, it's kind of, she's just Latina, and it can be whatever. I guess
that's what I was saying in the first two, in the beginning. But go ahead, continue.
But I'm just saying, like, me and Ruben have talked. I think earlier we mentioned that people of Mexican descent are of the majority, and as Latinx, as Chicanx, and we often erase Central Americans and people of Caribbean, like, I feel like, I don't know, I think for me it would be cool if she was Afro-Latina, or if she was Central American, or she could be both, I don't know, but that's just me trying to piss off the Chicanxes.
Damn.
They'll be like, why isn't she Mexican?
How dare you?
Yeah.
wait, but I do want to talk about her ethnicity and her origin, right?
Yeah.
Because number 7, which I talked about at the comic signing, fantastic comic books in Berkeley. And I know you love Shout out to
they were really nice. I don't fuck with, I'm very particular about my comic book shops. Like, first of all, they have to be super queer and trans and POC friendly, right? And then next, they have to be like knowledgeable and super nice to me, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sorry, what? Comic books are a fucking luxury.
No, you have to. Like, listen, go to Golden Apple Comics in LA, mom and pop shop, lovely. Literally engaged everyone that came in the door.
Golden Comic, and it's huge.
Yeah.
Oh my, I'm from LA, so.
Oh yeah, Golden Apple, you know them.
Golden Apple, okay, so I had two homes. Okay, so, oh, okay. I don't want to get derailed.
okay.
So no, but I might edit this in a weird
way. I don't want to get derailed, but.
Okay.
And now we bring it back to, and now we bring it back to America's ethnicity.
Yeah.
Listen, so the scheduling of episodes is very Marvel based, right? Like Will Moss comes up with a schedule, and then Greater Marvel has all this shit going on that we don't know about. So America, we got through our first 4 episodes, and then we had 5 and 6 that had to be like asides, basically. That's how we got the Kate Bishop and America team up, right?
Yeah.
So then they told us that they were doing Marvel Legacy. And so that changed our scheduling once again. And Will Moss was like, yo, but what this means is that number 7 can be what you want it to be. It can be an America origin story. And I was like, oh, shit, that sounds beautiful. I've got some legs under me, some experience. I'm learning in public how to write comics. Like,
yeah, girl.
Let's do it. So I was distressed. What do I do with a generic Latinx character? How do you make her Latina? What do you choose? What country, what island, what dialect, what slang? Who is she? How do I do her justice? I was stressed. And so I started reading books on like indigenous Latinidad and indigenous history in the U.S. I reached out to all the people of color that I respect across race, like Black folks, Afro-Latinos, like Asian folks, API, everybody, like, but specifically with like Latinos and Afro-Latinos, like what is going to make sense for America Chavez and Latinidad in the context of outer space? Like outer fucking space. She's intergalactic.
Oh yeah, bitches. She's from outer space.
So is it, and
which again is like she's an intergalactic Latina, like,
yeah.
What the fuck, when have we ever,
so go ahead,
an Aquarius.
Aquarius, make her an Aquarius, please. Yeah.
And if you watch sci-fi movies, white people, I feel like white people, y'all are like, oh my God, outer space where we're free of people of color, hallelujah, you know, like, you know, their outer space is like, unless it's Star Trek from the 1950s or 60s, there's no people of color, right? But for me, one thing that's important is how do we navigate our identities centering joy instead of oppression and like colonization and the diaspora in moments? Because I think that all those things need to be in balance. Like sometimes I very much am living in the effects of like colonialism, right? But I'm also like, where's the joy? Are we allowed to be joyful? Are we allowed to be brown without rape and war and violence? What does that look like in outer space? And so talking with my friends and talking with people I respect, what bubbled up from all of that was the idea of like myths and legends and narratives that go beyond the immediate, like, we are people on this land. Like, what are the stories that we tell people, you know? Like, what's the magic? And I thought,
there's no white people.
Yo, but you know something wild? Wild, like, again, like, Shout outs to my homegirl, Julieta Salgado, photographer out in Brooklyn, who was like, gee, do you understand that imagining brownness devoid of colonization, war, and violence is in and of itself internalized white supremacy? Because whiteness comes from that place of nothing. And I was like, wow. I was like, fuck. Long story short, I decided to go with an origin narrative. So we get espíritus and we get like brown magic in the galaxies, like before the beginnings of civilization. There is brown, there is black, there is womanhood, there is like essence of like creative, essence of creation, like spirit. So that's where we get America from. Like I created all this like spiritual world and then we created a planet. So now America is from a planet in outer space. Look for number 7, and that planet is gonna experience its own issues with, well, we got this rad black and brown planet with all sorts of folks of all sorts of genders and presentations. What do we do when white supremacy finds us? Dun, dun, dun!
So space colonization.
God damn it! I tried so hard!
Space, you know, colonization, and, you know, what we call neocolonization, you know, gentrification, which...
That's what that means?
Well, neocolonization, yeah, like, it's a lot of what it's what people refer to gentrification as a lot of times.
Is it like second wave colonization? Is that what neo means?
Some, or like yo, third listen, wave, fourth wave, yeah.
I read these things try, but it's hard.
I had posted actually an article recently, not like a couple weeks ago, I feel, in Chicanitma about gentrification being labeled as any form of colonization and how it kind of erases, you know, indigenous folks, and they are still dealing with colonization. So I would say no to gentrification is not like any new form of colonization. It is violent. I think gentrification is violent, just like colonization is just like poverty is, but there is a lot of Native Indigenous folks who do not, who, you know, for very justified reasons, oppose that gentrification being compared to colonization. And again, because they are still experiencing the effects of colonialism, the effects of colonization, you know. So, just side note to that.
That's real. That's fucking real as shit. So then, we're just gonna call it what it is. It's gentrification, right? So... this has been a part of your narrative. You mentioned, like, growing up in New York in Ash Bronx, or what is it? When, like, things were burning down. And
oh, yeah, yeah, the Bronx was burning. I feel like every Latinx person should look into that. Look into the Young Lords and look into the history of the Bronx, because it really is, like, it was burning the fuck down. Because
I feel like when we think about the civil rights movements, like the Black Panther Party, which obviously, I mean, brilliant. And also like Chicanx are stuck on like the Brown Berets, who don't get me wrong, of course they did work. But I think, yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't know about the Young Lords. They've never even heard.
Not only were they a space for a lot of Afro-Latinxes, but Sylvia Rivera was a fucking Young Lord, right? Like,
yes, I was about to say that.
And an educator within the Young Lord Party.
Yeah.
Which is fucking wild, yo.
Yeah, like, a trans woman, like a leader of a fucking radical group, right?
Yeah. Ugh. And when people think that like identity politics are like so millennial, or like that's like some white people shit, you know? It's like, no, if you look at our people, I want everyone to read Pa'lante, the history of the Young Lords, and also Queer Brown Voices, which is an edited like series of essays on the Latinos working in LGBTQ movements in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. We have always been doing this work. We have always been fighting for not just like, cultural capital at all, but like we've been fighting for the right to like have lunch in school. We've been fighting for the right to have sanitation come into our neighborhoods. We have been fighting these battles against white supremacy for as long as our peoples have been in this country, right? So for me, that's like 1940s. That's when a lot of what I understand Puerto Ricans came here. Maybe earlier as well. But for me, my history in this country starts in like the 30s and 40s, right? And so it's like, we've always been doing this work. It like baffles me. It baffles me when people think that this is some fad.
Let's all take a breath.
It is now time for everyone's favorite game. Lambs all across the world. Are you ready for, I don't know her.
Or I know her. And so those who might not know about what the fuck we're talking about, right? Because you might not be indoctrinated in the church of Mariah Carey. Once upon a time, Mariah Carey was asked about fellow Latina, Jennifer Lopez. And Mariah Carey said, I don't know her. And that could mean a lot of things. It could mean, I literally do not know this bitch. I know this bitch, but I don't want to talk about this bitch.
Or, how dare you ask me about this bitch?
Yes. So, right now, we're going to ask our guest. We're just going to name a couple of people. And they're going to tell us, I know her or I don't know her. Right? And then they can say, they can explain why they know her or why they don't know her. Or they can just leave it as that. Right? So, I can start. Cardi B.
We're related. I love her forever. She is like every homegirl I've ever grown up with. Like, Cardi B. Cardi B is family.
So you know her.
I know her.
Okay. Snow the product.
I know her.
I don't.
Captain America.
Who? I don't know him.
Tegan and Sarah.
Oh my god, hey! I know them.
Britney Spears.
Of course we know her. Britney's like... Britney's like that cool, like, dance teacher that you had back in the day that loved gay people and shit and taught you how to, like, you know, like, do a split. You know what I'm saying? Her politics are a little funny, but you love her.
Her politics are a little funny.
I don't know about her politics. I don't think I want to know.
I don't think she has any, but just in general.
Jennifer Lopez.
I know her, but I also want to have a long conversation with her. Jenny needs to be called in a big way, and no one is ever willing to do that. So I love her, but she needs to come to the barbecue so we can talk.
Okay. How about Drake?
Drake, stop fucking my cousins, all right? Jesus Christ, we're going to have a conversation. How many babies you trying to have out here in the Bronx, Drake? I'm invested in you as a person, but literally, what's good? I know him. I'm looking for him.
Oh my God, this reminds me. One big question we forgot to talk about that we both were very invested in before this interview. America Chavez's white love interest.
Oh my God, no. Nia is out there waiting in the car. I have to go. Oh my God. Yeah, no white booze 2017.
No white booze 2017.
No white booze 2017. No white booze 2017. Get yourself brown, babe. Listen, I broke up with my white girlfriend, right? And I'm just a little tea. And my mother loved her, right? Like, out of all the blanquitas, because I've dated way too many that I brought home, my mother loved this one. This one made shit. She could sew. She could cook. Lovely person. But when I broke up with her, my mother, after like an hour of letting me cry, she was petting my head. And she's like, Nena, I think it's time that you let a little brown sugar in your life. You know what I'm saying?
So why partners in mainstream media? Do you know her or do you not know her?
I do not want to know her anymore. Case closed. My father was literally like, girl, you better get out of this like iceberg shit and go find you. You know what I mean? Like, get out of the whitewater rafting club and go find you, like, you know, some people that I literally feel like my mom was saying, go find you someone that looks like me. in that statement. That's what I feel like. It was like a loving thing and also like a call in to be like, you've been looking outside of yourself for so long for love, and now is the time to like look at who has been loving you and how you can love them.
That's real. And
on that note,
did you want to add any last things about like, where can people find America Chavez? Where can they find you?
Oh, okay. I am at Quirky Rican, Q-U-I-R-K-Y Rican on Twitter and Instagram. And my last thought is this. If you are thriving and capable and able to mentor other folks in your world, young people, elderly folks, however you are able to like be in community with the people around you, that is like the number one thing that I would love to ask everyone to do, is figure out the ways that feel right to them to engage. The fact that you are alive is so important and so crucial into the development of other people. Just knowing that brown, queer people can live and be in love and be happy and be beautiful can change the lives of so many young people out there in the world. So in any way that you can be a mentor, be a mentor.
Thank you for those words and thank you for coming here.
All right, I gotta go.
Bye.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Chilling with you.
May I kiss your cheek?
Yes.
Cassandra, so lovely. I'm glad we got a chance to talk.
Yes. Thank
all right,
you.
I'm out of here.
Bye. To the next. She is literally running out of the studio. And the studio, I mean my kitchen. All right, and that was our interview with Gaby Rivera. I know that was hella long, but I hope it was as fun for y'all as it was for us to record. So, a couple things, right? So, we talked a lot about America Chavez, the comic book, and if y'all haven't read it, go check it out at your local comic book shop. If you like what you read, hashtag it make mine Chavez and or tag me, Queer Chicano Chisme, on IG and Twitter, and I'll retweet you or I'll repost you. Also, if you are interested in a signed edition of America Chavez issues 1-6, repost this episode on your Twitter or on your Instagram and tag Bitter Brown Femmes, and we will you will be entered into a contest to win this full run of America Chavez that is signed by Gaby Rivera. Each post on IG and Twitter will earn you one entry. And winners will be decided before the release of the next episode. Yeah, so I think that is that. Did you want to add anything else?
No, I think that was a very long episode, and I'm so excited for the giveaway. Thank you so much, Gabby, for coming on our show. It was awesome talking to you. I guess we wanted to just end the episode with our song that we picked. And because we talked about Gronacoma, I guess we chose a Fea song, which again is their side band. And if you haven't checked out Gronacoma, or maybe you've only listened to Gronacoma but not Fea, I suggest you listen to both. And so the song that we are going to play is Mujer Moderna by Fea. And that's the end. Do you want to add anything, Ruben?
No, just follow Bitter Brown Femmes on IG, on Twitter. If you, you know, want to see more episodes of Bitter Brown Femmes being done quicker, feel free to call the city of El Paso so they can save Duranguito, right?
Yes, we are actually about to hit a month since we've been at occupying the space in Duranguito, so you still need to be calling the city. And if you're in El Paso, you need to go directly down there.
Yeah.
And tell them that you want more episodes of Bitter Brown Femmes.
Yeah. Again, Duranguito is El Paso's first neighborhood, and it's currently under threat of being demolished. And Cassandra's revolutionary ass is, you know, holding space outside of Duranguito to, like, save it. She's like, yeah, over my dead body or whatever. Yeah.
Please help me get home.
All right, and with that, here is Fea's song, Mujer Moderna. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye.